WMRA News. I'm Bob Levicky. More than 30% of Virginia's counties are maternity care deserts, and we explore the effect of that lack of care in Page County. The Wildlife Center in Waynesboro is taking in more eagles these days. And efforts to ease the fentanyl crisis in Virginia are showing some hopeful signs. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, June 25th. All of Virginia is under at least a drought watch advisory. The Drought Monitoring Task Force said that as of Monday, June 23rd, most of the Commonwealth's regional streamflow and groundwater indicators are at warning or emergency levels. Northern Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley are under a drought warning, which means a drought is imminent. Governor Glenn Youngkin's chief of staff is stepping down, and a domino effect will result in his cabinet. The governor's office announced Monday that Jeff Gettman is leaving the role. He will be replaced as chief of staff to the administration by John Little, who is currently the Secretary of Health and Human Resources. Janet Vestal Kelly, former Secretary of the Commonwealth, will then become Health and Human Resources Secretary of Virginia starting July 8th. More than 30% of Virginia's counties are maternity care deserts. That means they have no nearby hospitals or providers who deliver babies. WMRA's Henry Brannan looks at one maternity care desert in the Shenandoah Valley and the impact that lack of access has on pregnant people here.
Earlier this year, Newmarket firefighter EMT Courtney Minton responded to two 911 calls in 2 months from two gas stations in the small Shenandoah County town.
The first one that we had, she was coming from home trying to get to Sentara. That was the plan. Obviously, she delivered in the Exxon parking lot.
Both calls came from women in labor who had to pull over while making the 45-minute drive from their homes in Page County, west over Massanutten Mountain, and south down to Harrisonburg's Sentara RMH Medical Center. That's the nearest labor and delivery unit. Minton delivered the second baby herself in the back of an ambulance as they raced down Interstate 81 to Sentara.
The first cry is a sigh of relief, honestly. I mean, you know, the baby's okay because they're crying. The baby's crying, mom's crying because she's, you know, just delivered her little bundle of joy. And I'm over here trying not to cry because I just delivered her little bundle of joy.
Out of the nearly 4 million babies born in the U.S. in 2022, all but about 83,000 were born in hospitals, with the remaining infants born in places like birth centers and homes. But about 4,500 were born in places categorized as other, a designation that includes circumstances like Minton's two recent patients.
I think it's crazy that it happened within that short amount of time, coming from the same direction, headed the same direction, and it just didn't make it.
No agency tracks where those other births happen, but in addition to the two Minton encountered, Sentara and a local midwifery practice also confirmed a handful of car births in the area. Less than 25,000 people live in Page County, with only about 4,000 women of childbearing age. The closest labor and delivery unit closed in 2018, and while there is a hospital there, it says it can't support an obstetric unit with so few births. That lack of access can be dangerous.
I remember being concerned about ice on the mountain.
That's Fallon Brumback, a mom of three in Page County seat, Luray.
Having to drive at night alone while having these contractions and the rational, irrational fear that I'm going to have to pull over and have this baby.
One night late into her last pregnancy, she started having contractions and set out on the nearly hour-long drive over the Blue Ridge Mountains to Fauquier Health in Warrenton.
And just mantra in my head, just get there, just get there, just get there.
She did, and the contractions were a false alarm. But 1 week later, a routine appointment turned into an emergency C-section that doctors said almost killed her. Her daughter was born healthy and Brumback recovered, but she knows the outcome could have been different if she hadn't made it to the hospital. Melanie Rouse is the maternal mortality programs manager at the Virginia Department of Health. She says a lack of access to care has contributed to pregnant Virginians' deaths.
It is one of our top contributors that we do see, particularly in cases in the rural areas.
Maternal mortality is rare, with 64 deaths out of about 96,000 births in Virginia in 2021. But the issue is serious, and research shows people without access to care experience problems like preterm births at significantly higher rates.
One of those things where, of course, if we do nothing, things will get worse. But we are taking collective action.
That action includes a recent state law that expanded Medicaid to cover the care that certified doulas provide, and another that requires insurers to cover it too. But for pregnant people in Page County, with maternity care options only shrinking, the answer for now has been a mixture of hope, anxiety, and preparation. For VPM News and WMRA, I'm Henry Brannan.
The Wildlife Center of Virginia is a hospital for native wild animals that teaches veterinarians in training and the public how to care for the natural world. The center has admitted an increasing number of bald eagles in recent years. WMRA's Randy B. Hagee reports.
Two new patients were en route to the Wildlife Center last Wednesday, just in time for American Eagle Day. The holiday commemorates the anniversary of the adoption of the Great Seal of the United States, which features an eagle in its design, on June 20, 1782. Dr. Cara Pierce, Director of Veterinary Services at the center, told me about the expected arrivals.
One of them is a transfer from the Southwest Virginia Wildlife Center. I think it just was found on the ground, not flying. And then the other one is coming from, I think, Virginia Beach, is a transfer from a rehabilitator as well. And I believe it had a leg injury. So we'll see when they get here.
Being ogled by a human reporter is a stressful experience for an injured wild animal, so I didn't visit the patients myself. The eagle you hear in the background is 16-year-old Buddy. He's an education ambassador who lives at the center because of a permanent beak misalignment, meaning he couldn't survive in the wild. Buddy had just gotten his regular beak trim that morning and was busy munching on a fish. Bald eagle populations have rebounded dramatically since the 1960s, but with increasing numbers come more eagles trying to find habitat and food alongside humans.
They are doing better in the wild, which is great. Their numbers have kind of rebounded from a previous low, but with that, they are struggling sometimes to find appropriate habitat to live in or choosing to live in habitat where there might be a higher risk of conflict with humans.
That has resulted in more and more bald eagle patients coming to the center. 20 years ago, they admitted 21 of the raptors. That number rose to a record-breaking 66 bald eagles last year, and they're on track to match that number again this year.
We get a ton of bald eagles that were hit by cars. Oftentimes, they're actually scavenging on the side of the road, so they might find, like, a hit-by-car opossum on the side of the road. That's a great meal for a bald eagle. If there is something dead they can go for first that is to their liking, they're going to go for that. But often, those things are on roadsides, putting them at risk, potentially, to be hit by car.
She said 3 out of every 4 eagles coming in test positive for some amount of lead in their blood, which can directly cause neurological problems and make them susceptible to other injuries.
So they are out there again scavenging, and they find a hunter harvested carcass. And what will happen is the hunters will field dress their carcass. So you shoot your deer in the field, you take all the insides out that you don't want to take home to feed your family. And those little insides have little pieces of lead mixed in them, little fragments basically. That's another great meal for a bald eagle. So they'll come along and feast on those things. And then they have a really, really, really acidic stomach. So that acid interacts with the lead and basically leaches the lead out so they can absorb it into their blood system. The biggest impact we see is certainly from the neurologic effects. They're likely predisposed to other issues if they're not neurologically appropriate. So in my mind, it's much more likely a bald eagle that's suffering from lead intoxication is going to be hit by a car because they don't have their wits about them.
When a new eagle comes in, the vet team gives them a little time to quiet down after being transported across the state by a strange giant human.
And then we will do a full physical exam. We are a teaching hospital, so most oftentimes our students are going to be involved in that physical exam, looking at the whole patient. We're going to look at the eyes, the beak, the wings, the feathers, looking for any kind of issues, any indication for what was wrong with this patient. Sometimes we have a good idea when they come in. You know, the finder will be like, oh, his right wing was drooping to the ground. But sometimes they come in with minimal to no history, just, you know, wasn't flying.
Then come the diagnostics, including x-rays and blood work. If there's a bone fracture, the eagle may require surgery, or just a bandage coupled with pain medication, food, fluids, and rest. For lead intoxication, the vets will administer medication twice a day that pulls the lead out of the blood so the bird can excrete it. Recovery time can range from a few days to more than a year.
Once they're medically cleared, the vet team passes them off to the rehab team, and they go outside into our big flight pens to start exercising. Because just like humans, if you don't exercise for a while, you get out of shape pretty quickly, and they have to be athletes, right? They need to be able to fly, to find food, to get to the tops of trees, get out of the way of cars quickly. So we want to make sure before we release them that they are performing at their kind of peak athletic endurance and ability.
The number of eagles coming in has at times strained the center's physical capacity.
We have 3 flight pens that are big enough to hold bald eagles. They're huge. They're great for them. But, you know, for the last, oh my gosh, probably 2 years, they have been full consistently with eagles waiting to move into them sometimes. And luckily, eagles, you can house them together. They play nice. As long as there's enough food, they really don't bother each other for the most part. But definitely, I have never felt this much pressure on our big flight pens because of the number of eagles we have. And because some of them are these longer term cases that they are improving, but so slowly that they need more time out there, taking space away from another patient that might need that space.
To protect your local eagles, the center advises hunters to use non-lead ammunition. Motorists should be mindful while driving and not throw trash out of the car. Even something that seems innocuous, like an apple core, can attract a raccoon to the roadside, which then draws in an eagle. For WMRA News, I'm Randy B. Hagee.
We've posted photos of the Wildlife Center's eagles at WMRA.org and on the app. Members of the so-called I-9, a group of anti-war protesters who barricaded Interstate 95 with PVC pipe and ladders and marched, were sentenced on Monday. Megan Pauley with VPM News was at the trial.
On Friday, prosecutors dropped 2 charges, including unlawful assembly, against all 9 right off the bat. And after nearly 7 hours of debate, General District Court Judge Manzi Shah dismissed the obstructing free passage charge against 8 protesters. That left just a misdemeanor stopping another vehicle charge. The defense argued protesters weren't there for the sole purpose of stopping traffic, but instead to protest the war in Gaza. However, the prosecution argued the stopped interstate traffic was more than a small inconvenience and tied up an ambulance for hours. On Monday, 8 of the 9 protesters were sentenced to 5 days jail time.
Megan Pauley reporting. Virginia's First Lady and Attorney General rolled out a fentanyl awareness campaign in Roanoke earlier this year, and there are some positive trends both in that city and statewide. Virginia Public Radio's Nick Gilmore reports.
Since its launch back in January, more than 500 adults in the Roanoke region have signed the It Only Takes One campaign pledge to talk to a teen or child in their life about the dangers of fentanyl. Attorney General Jason Meares says that's important because it's only a matter of when, not if, a child is offered something laced with the drug.
And they're never offered fentanyl. It's always a Percocet, a Xanax, an Anorol. Your child always thinks they're taking something else, something counterfeit. 75% of these pills on the street that are counterfeit or laced with fentanyl.
When the multimedia campaign was launched, Roanoke had the highest concentration of overdose deaths of any metropolitan area in Virginia. And while the city and the Commonwealth as a whole have more work to do, First Lady Suzanne Youngkin says state and local efforts are working.
We saw 2022 numbers at 22.9 for every 100,000 Virginians. And in 2023, that was 20.6. for every 100,000. It's not as big a decrease as we would like, but it is going in the right direction.
Because of the success in the Roanoke area, Youngkin says the Virginia Department of Health has committed to begin rolling out the It Only Takes One campaign statewide this fall, with a continued emphasis on at-risk communities. In Roanoke, I'm Nick Gilmore.
And finally today, lawmakers will return to the Capitol once again later this week, and one issue they have yet to resolve involves skill games. Also with Virginia Public Radio, Michael Pope reports.
Members of the Virginia House of Delegates will be back at the Capitol for a summertime session to make a change to benefits for veterans and their families. They are not expected to take up legislation legalizing slot machine-style games at truck stops and convenience stores, although Senate Majority Leader Scott Surovell says there would be widespread support if they did.
The bills of the past had passed by very wide margins, and the governor came in extraordinarily late in the process with his comments and edits, and he also promised people he was going to work towards a solution. So I think the advocates think that with the large bipartisan consensus and the governor saying he was going to work with them, that they were expecting him to work with them.
Delegate Paul Krizek is a Democrat from Fairfax County who's calling for a moratorium on any new gambling until a commission can be set up to oversee Virginia's growing new industry.
The skill game bills that have been proposed indicate something like 30,000 to 35,000 machines. That's the equivalent of 10 new casinos worth of slot machines. So I think let's put a pause on this. Get this gaming commission stood up. It'll probably take a couple years. That process will help us to vet new gambling ventures like skill gaming.
Many lawmakers don't want to wait that long, though, and they're hoping to gavel back into session and pass a skill games bill just as soon as they can strike a deal with the governor. Michael Pope.
For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy your Tuesday.